Terrific. A lot to think about. I mean, we're just beginning to get into this compensation issue, I think, in this country in a serious way. And this discussion this morning, I think, makes that clear. I want to give Mark and Susan a chance to react to our two commenters' comments.
The only comment that I wanted to make is that, in fact, the public agenda report does focus on this difference that Rick was making and that Howard didn't see in the AFT survey, which is that younger teachers, 69% of the young teachers, believe that teachers ought to make more money if they were doing an outstanding job in their classroom, that there ought to be a greater connection between contribution and compensation. And I think that that's part of what people are seeing in other parts of the world as well, that Fred Ackerman, the union person in Australia, in one of the states, said, you know, these young people are different from the way we were. They've got different ideas. They're not planning to make this a 30-year career. They're here for a while. They want to be able to make money that's based on how they do. They want to move faster up the salary scale if they're really good. And then they want to be able to take it and move on to the next field. So we're probably not going to find 30-year teachers anymore. Rick talks about 30 years from now. I'm not sure we're going to have public schools 30 years from now. I think we're going to have a very different mix of opportunities for young people. And so part of what we're talking about is, what do we do immediately to start getting a group of teachers and principals in place who can lead schools that are knowledge rich and that create greater productivity on the part of the teachers and the staff as well as of the students.
Mark?
Yeah, many years ago, excuse me, I'm sorry, there was a book by one of our magnificent gurus of management, Peter Drucker, who talked about, it was where he introduced the term knowledge work and knowledge workers. And he described knowledge work as the work of the future, which is basically what I was trying to say in my own opening remarks. And he, excuse me, he contrasted knowledge work with blue collar work. By his description, teaching in the United States has been blue collar work. And he described the future as very different. It is a world in which, as he put it, the blue collar worker, he said, demands an honest day's wage, a fair day's wage for an honest day's work. The knowledge worker, he said, wants an extraordinary day's pay for an extraordinary day's work. The people that we are going to need in this country as teachers in the years ahead, I believe, are precisely the people who Google is trying to attract, and they are the people, as Rick and Susan just said, who are far less interested in the kind of job security that my parents were, and in fact I was. I was born in 1939 with a very distinct, almost genetic memory of the Great Depression. Security was an overriding concern. It isn't an overriding concern of our young people today. They are, just as Susan just said, interested in what I can get now and how I can make my way. They're convinced that if they have an opportunity in the next 10 years, they can take care of their own security. It's an entirely different attitude, and they desperately want to be recognized, as Peter Drucker said, for what they can contribute. They don't want to be treated the same as everybody. This is a very touchy issue in American education. My own view of it is roughly as follows. I think that for a very long time, advancement in our public school system was a matter of being loyal to the people above you. And I think there are very good reasons for that. Teachers knew that, principals knew that, and superintendents knew it. And so any system that was based on compensation that was arrived at for a teacher by somebody in a supervisory position was going to be based on loyalty, and every teacher in the system knew it. I don't think, and that I think engendered enormous suspicion of any performance-based pay system. But why is it, do you suppose, that in most of the rest of professional employment in the United States, it is commonplace for judgments to be made about supervisors as to the quality of work done by the people who work for them, professionals? And that's accepted by the professionals and it's accepted by the supervisor. In fact, it is unquestioned. Why would that be? Well, in my view, it's very simple. It is because, generally speaking, the people in the organizations that work that way believe that they are on the same side. That is to say that they will all be judged, in effect, on the same basis. So therefore, the supervisor's judgments are being made largely on the basis, there's always a matter of personal loyalty involved, but largely on the basis of their success in the job. I honestly believe the reason teachers have been so opposed to performance-based pay is precisely because they don't believe that the judgments are going to be made on the basis of how well they have been teaching students. And I think there's an enormous amount of evidence to support that judgment. What's happening now, not just in the United States, but all over the industrialized world, is that what you make anywhere in the economy is much more a matter, a function of what you know than it ever was before. Education's become much more important, which is why all over the world we now have various forms of accountability movements. That is to say, government trying to figure out how to hold schools accountable for student performance. What that is going to do is to put principals, superintendents, and teachers on the same side. That is, what will be operating on all of them is very powerful forces to improve the performance of the students. The more that is true, the more I believe that Peter Drucker's vision of employment is going to take hold. We are going to pay people based on what they can contribute to improve student performance, superintendents, principals, and teachers. And a whole reshaping, not just of compensation, but of working conditions, all of it, is going to take place as a result. Because the most valuable person on the planet, this is obviously an exaggeration, but I'm trying to make a point, is going to be those people who can contribute to improved education performance of national education systems. That will transform it all.
Very interesting. Howard, do you have a comment on Mark's?
You wouldn't be surprised that I'm squirming a little bit about what I would consider the mischaracterization of young people, because I was young once and remember what I thought, and I probably would have been in the majority of Susan's poll at that point, but young people eventually get old and they might change along the way and become like all the old people before them. Plus, I have a couple kids in college, one's got 5 weeks left, and he already signed a contract with Toyota to be an engineer. And we got his contract last summer because he moves all over the place and he sends it to his permanent address, and we're reading his contract, and about the first thing it says is, do not share this information with anybody else. And we're reading and I went, oh, the charter school teachers in New Orleans shouldn't get so upset, because obviously this is just part of the ceremony, because I know these kids, it's a market. These kids know what each other is making, and before they take the job, they know where they're going to be at in a couple of years. And the contract says you're going to make X amount of dollars, and your bonus is going to be $5,000. It's in the contract. I mean, they just expect to get this bonus. And then there's a time and a half provision. Now, he's a professional worker. The ninth hour is free, and after that, it's time and a half or more. And because it's a market, he knows in his division what time and a half has been lately, and he adds on the dollars to that, and so that's the figure he sees. Nobody's also concerned about where he lives and what the schools are like and his girlfriend and all of that. So I think, you know, kids are more, you know, retirement's a long ways off and you don't worry about those things, but the older you get, the more that sets into the mind work. And I don't think as a country we can afford to think of teaching as a temporary occupation that you're in until you got to go get a better job because it pays more or whatever. The countries that are working, Finland, Korea, Japan, they make it clear, whether it's money or not, that teacher is a valued profession and it should be a career. And I don't see why we should ignore those models.
I guess, Susan, do you have a...
No, I think that we're seeing the same issue across the nations, and that's why they're all focused so on recruitment, is that they are seeing that the times are different. Young people see more opportunities, and I'm sure that your son looked at places other than Toyota before he chose Toyota. And it's based on what the opportunities are. And if in 5 years or 7 years he decides, you know, I've done this. Now I want to take what I've learned and do something better. The company will have contributed to his knowledge base, which is what our schools need to do. And then teachers might decide they want to go into administration. They might decide they want to go into policy. They might decide they want to go into lots of different areas. And I think that it's not the tyranny of women have to be teachers, nurses, or social workers, or that people of color didn't have wide opportunities available, that now is part of the market that we see. So I just think that as the world changes, the expectations of people change, and it's been one of the things that we've seen with the Gen Xers and now are seeing with the young people. They're committed to what they're doing when they're doing it. But they look at wanting to have a variety of experiences. And I think when we look at teachers, it will be pretty much the same thing. Certainly some will stay forever, but we can't assume that everyone will. And you got to start them all at a salary that's competitive. So I'm in full agreement with your notion about you got to have a basic salary that's competitive with these other areas if we expect to get young people to consider it.
I'm going to ask Mark one question, and then we'll open it up to the audience. So if we buy your picture of where we are and where we're going, particularly with the accountability movement, will this accountability effort and getting all the workers in a school on the same page ultimately lead to increased salary for teachers, both going in, because you've already seen that the United States salaries are low relative to other countries when you look at GNP, and then will we move to a more diversified pay system on top of an enhanced base level? And how do we get there? Through experimentation? And these other countries really didn't give us a pathway particularly.
No, they didn't. I'm awfully sorry to do this to you, but we have a report coming out in December.
Oh, I know.
Which will make a set of proposals on the points that you're raising. But I don't plan to scoop myself this afternoon, this morning rather, but
that's fair.
but I do think that it's I am not in favor of having a teaching profession in which people are only around for 3 or 4 years in our schools. Nor is Susan. That's not what we're saying. But if you look at the structure of the profession now, it's actually very odd. About half of the people who leave our teachers' colleges and go into teaching are gone in 5 years. And then there's a winnowing out. And then there's a large fraction that goes right straight through to the end. Now, if you think about that, it actually doesn't make any sense. If you think about it from the standpoint of, if you were the employer of all the teachers, is that what you would want? I rather doubt it. There's no case to be made on the data that the people who survive this system, that is, who stay to the end, are a great deal better than the more than half that are gone after 5 years. It's not the case at all. Imagine what it would be like if the median tenure of teachers was 10 years instead of 5. We would need to have half as many teacher education institutions as we have. Do you know how much more we could pay our teachers if we did that? Just think about it in terms of the structure of the economics of teaching in the United States. Now assume that we had in effect a median term of teachers of 10 years instead of 5, and then you had not a fall off a precipice, but some stayed for 10, some stayed for 15, some stayed for 20, and some stayed the whole system out. Do you know what you would then have? You would have something that looked like the officer corps of the United States military, which is an up-or-out system. The people who stay in the system stay only because they're promoted, right? Suppose you had a teacher ladder in this country, so you had a somewhat similar system. That is, the people who stayed were the best people, not the people whose primary concern was security, which is an entirely different matter, right? Think about paying for that just in terms of the improved efficiencies of such a system. Believe me, I haven't foreshadowed what we're going to be proposing in December. But I just picked out one little piece of this. I honestly think if you look at the current system of employment of teachers in this country from the standpoint of getting the most for our money, the system we have makes no sense.